afternoon. This is your Captain Joe. Up in the captain's chair, it is one bell of the afternoon watch. And I'm broadcasting, of course, live, as I always do. And today I'm broadcasting from the Columbia River Maritime Museum. I had hoped to be broadcasting from the Cape Disappointment Lighthouse. But as I was making my way from Eugene, Oregon, to the Pacific Coast, a couple things happened en route that caused me some delay. And so I've only gotten as far as the Maritime Museum, which is one of the great maritime museums in America. I'm broadcasting to you live, of course, as I always do, wherever I happen to be in the world. And the Voice of Vashon, 101.9 on the FM band, and streaming live all over the world to all of Captain Joe's people, wherever you may be, on voiceofvashon.org. This is a truly sad day for me, a day which, when I started it out, I thought I would have a wonderful and happy program accomplishing my mission to make all of us feel just a little bit better about ourselves and about the world in which we live at the end of the half hour that we spend together. But as I was crossing the Pacific Coast Range, and if you ever are in this part of the world and you want a wonderful day trip, take the trip from Portland out to 101, the coast road, and drive through the mountains, and of course you go across the Pacific Coast Range. And as I was driving across, the Indiphone rang. The C-Class that I'm driving, Mary C-Class, is not wired for to take telephone calls while I'm driving. And so I said to myself, I will just wait until I get to my destination before I take care of that call. But it rang again, and then it rang a third time, and then I could see that it was from my friend and colleague, Fred, who lives in Los Angeles and who is a stalwart of the Coast Guard Channel. So knowing that Fred was trying to reach me three times in a row, I knew that it was something important. And so I pulled over to a lay-by and I took the call. It was the notice that a friend, a brother captain, cutter captain, a brother Vietnam vet, had crossed his own bar. And here, the symbolism of that, here I am headed to broadcast to you and to talk to you from overlooking the Columbia River Bar, one of the worst bars in the world. My friend and brother cutter captain Armand Toby Chapeau died yesterday. And it is not given to us to know the day nor the hour. And we certainly were not expecting this to happen. Toby had been ill. He had been in the hospital. He had returned home. And we kept getting signals from him saying that things were improving. I don't know yet what the cause of death was. And I have read the obituary, which is with his notification from the funeral home. So I'm going to take this opportunity to reflect a little bit, not only on Toby's life, but reflect on the idea that it is not given to us to give up the ship. Toby persisted in a number of things in his life. And one of those was to be able to come into the Coast Guard in the first place. He started out in the Coast Guard Reserve and then was able to come into the regular service. He then had several assignments, and the and one of those assignments was to one of our cutters in the Vietnam War. He was hit in the spine. He was wounded very badly, and he was sent to one of the Navy hospital ships to recover. During the recovery time, and none of this is in his obituary, these are all things that have come to us through, in fact, the Coast Guard Channel. And during his recovery time, he was being told that he would never, A, he would never walk again, and B, if he ever did walk again, he would not ever be able to go back on to active duty. But he persisted. He accepted the mission of getting himself back up and back on to active duty. The story is a long one. It is, though, a great exposition of the principle that all of us who go to sea, all of us who have chosen that way to make our living, have also been fulfilled with the idea that you never give up the ship. So Toby, after he was recovered, and he worked long and hard, and the story is a really interesting one of how he was able to convince the Coast Guard, the part of the Coast Guard that had not served in Vietnam, by the way, convinced the Coast Guard that not only was he able to return to full active duty, but that he should continue in his career, continue to be promoted. I call him a brother cutter captain, and for me, for the last years of his life, whenever he would appear on the Coast Guard Channel, whenever he would write an entry on the Coast Guard Channel, I would reply to that entry, and to me, he was alert emeritus. Captains carry the name of their ships, so alert is a Coast Guard cutter. She is still in commission. She's still doing her father's business. She is now over 50 years old. And she is a sister to my Reliance. Reliance, hull number 615, the lead ship in the class. And so Toby was alert. He was always alert, but he was also, because he was captain in alert, he was alert. And when he left her, he became, to me, alert emeritus. So he not only continued in his Coast Guard career, but he became alert. And a number of significant missions when he was alert are also part of Toby's story. When it came time for him to retire, and he retired with 29 years of service, he then became the chief of police for a town in Georgia called Griffin, Griffin, Georgia. He was the chief of police for Griffin, Georgia. My guess is, and I don't know this for sure, but my guess is, because I do know Toby's personality and I do know his story, my guess is that his form of policing was firm but compassionate. Every good captain has to be firm and with his crew, and he has to be compassionate. He has to understand that each one of those people that he is privileged to command is an individual person and has all of the problems and joys that every individual person has. And I am certain that alert emeritus, when he was alert, was all of those things, and I am equally certain that he carried those traits and those characteristics with him as the chief of police in Griffin, Georgia. My further suspicion is that there are a number of young people, in particular, who were given a second chance by the chief. That probably they were picked up for some infraction, maybe not so serious, but serious to them, and certainly serious to what was going to happen in their lives. And my guess is that instead of a write-up, what we call aboard ship being booked, being put on report, that they had to stand at attention before the chief and endure a really good and solid and hard ass-chewing. One which they did not want to ever repeat. That's my guess. That's my belief that that's the way that Mert Emeritus, now chief, ran his department when he was the chief of police at Griffin, Georgia. His obituary goes on to list all of the awards that he earned in the Coast Guard, but also all of the awards that he earned as a chief of police, and all of the things that he did after he became another honored retiree, a retiree from the police force. It is a remarkable story, and I probably will talk a little bit more about it when I know a little bit more about how he crossed the bar. For now, it'd be enough for me to say that Toby Alert Americus, in all of his life, did not give up this ship. There are so many examples of it in his story that we can all take this as an example. So over the week, I have had a couple of contacts of Captain Jones people from new members in being Captain Joe's people. A couple that have been with me before. And a couple of these had to do with giving up, quitting. And I have talked about this a lot before, because when we accept a mission or we create a mission, I talked last week about Anastasia and the business that she has created. And when we create a mission, such as creating a mission, as creating a business, we also have people who work for us. And if we're running a good and compassionate command, whether it be a business or whether it be a family or whatever it might be, we either create a mission or we accept a mission. And once we do that, we then have other people that are involved. These people come to, if it is a business, and we are now involved in their livelihood. If it is a search and rescue business where people's lives are at stake, not only are the people that you're going out to rescue, their lives at stake, but all of the people in your crew, they are depending on you to do the best and be the best. I say this from the captain's chair, having not always done the very best that I could. Nobody does. But when we recognize that we are not doing our best, then we have the obligation to pick it up and roll it out and climb back up into the captain's chair. Alert Emeritus. You fulfilled all of the thoughts and ideals of the oath that you took, the same oath that all of us who have served took. Adding to the medical list, there are others that are, some are doing better. My sister Liv, I put on the medical list. She's doing but others are suffering. All of you who are on the pinnacle list, whether it be physical, mental, emotional, now those who are Toby's family, all of you are in the palm of my hand. I had a question from a constant listener, one who listens every week, live when he can, and sometimes when he can't, he has to listen to the archive. And his question was, where does the expression souls on board come from when we refer to the number of people that are in an aircraft or in a ship, and in particular when that aircraft or ship is involved in some sort of accident or tragedy. So the term souls on board goes back for probably as almost as long as man has been going to sea when he first straddled that log. And it is because the idea that souls were human beings, and when we first started going to sea, there was a connection between the safety of the people that were going to sea with the almighty power that threatens all of us in hurricanes and typhoons. I have been myself in several Pacific typhoons and several Atlantic hurricanes, and I can tell you that the questioning of whether your soul is my soul, the soul of people that I'm privileged to command, is going to survive depends on my skills. So the word souls, for using it in this particular context, souls on board. In latter years, as in, let's say, the last 30, 40 years, somebody realized SOB, souls on board, that if you initialize that, it then becomes SOB. And that just did not seem to be a very nice way to refer to people who may be at risk. We are searching for one search and rescue case in which I was involved, in which I was the on-scene commander, and my Reliance was for a cargo ship carrying sugar that had rolled over off of the Outer Banks of North Carolina. And she had about 25 souls on board. We did not refer to them as SOB, but the latter term is now persons on board, POV. So, my dear good doctor, I hope that answers your question. It goes back centuries. It refers to the immortal souls of people who are at risk. And in latter days, it carried forward to aircraft when Captain O'Brien and the counselor were flying in their aircraft. And Captain O'Brien had to so skillfully put it down in the treetops. There were two SOBs on that aircraft. And to the great relief of all of us, but no surprise to me, because I knew of the consummate airmanship that Captain O'Brien exhibited, those two SOB, or POV, if you like, survived. We always hope that every SOB that we go and search and rescue survives. Alas, in the case of the sugar carrier, the ship was lost with all hands. My purpose of going to the south, to to Nevada was to go to the memorial service for Mary's sister Anne. And I took the opportunity to make it a road trip. And so my son Sean, who was Mary's son and then became my son, is my son. My son Sean and I took the opportunity to have a two-day trip to Carson City, Nevada. I will not at this point further characterize my feelings about Nevada, except to say that I go there because there's family there, much loved family. So we drove down. It took us 2 days. We took, I no longer can do 800 miles in a day. And we took an RON in Medford, Oregon, and then kept on going. The memorial service was everything that we had hoped that it would be. The trip with Sean was everything that both he and I wanted. We just had a wonderful time together. We are, when you get the opportunity to spend some time with an adult son, and just the two of you, and you get to probe around the edges and then explore in some depth all different kinds of subjects. The conversations and some of the things that we discussed, and maybe even the language level, the captain's language improvement program took a number of hits, but it was just a wonderful trip. And Shano had to come back early for a commitment, and so I am driving back myself and have been looking forward to making this broadcast from the light station at Cape Disappointment, but because of Fred's urgent telephone calls, we're doing it a little bit differently. But I tell this because if you're given the opportunity to spend some time in a road trip where you have to make up a certain number of miles every day is about as close as you can get, about as close aboard as you can get. And if you're given the opportunity to do that with somebody that you like and love and admire and respect, somebody like I do about my children, and in this case it was my son Sean, our son Sean, then I urge you to take it. And maybe even if you've got some rough edges that need to be smoothed out with that particular person, I urge you to take it. On the 4th of August, which is Friday, it is also the Coast Guard's birthday. It is number 223 for us. And on the Coast Guard birthday, the Coast Guard Festival in Grand Haven, Michigan happens every year. I have been to the festival in Grand Haven a number of times. I am an honorary citizen of Grand Haven, Michigan, as a matter of fact. And I urge anyone who would like to be immersed in Coast Guard history, Coast Guard lore, all sorts of activities related to both our history and the things that are happening to us now and where we see the Coast Guard going in the future, Grand Haven is the place to be on the 4th of August. So a happy birthday to the Coast Guard on the 4th of August, 223. I am not 223. Here at the Columbia River Maritime Museum is a lightship, the Columbia Lightship. Now, lightships, we have no more of them in the United States, and I'm not sure that there are any lightships anywhere in the world anymore. We had a number of them up on the Great Lakes during the lightship era, and the one that marked the Columbia River Bar was a lightship for many, many years. And a lightship is, first of all, is a completely powered vessel. It has a crew that lives aboard. It occupies a station which is on the charts, and in the case of the Columbia, in the case of the and they are they are painted red in this country. In fact, they're painted red all over the world. And alongside the side of the ship is painted the name of the station. So the lightship that is here as part of the Columbia River Maritime Museum has painted along her side Columbia. She is fully powered. She gets onto station and off of station under her own power. She has a captain. She has a crew. The ship stays on station, and she gets relieved, and her crew gets relieved by what were White House tenders before. And now, if we had those still, they would be usually Coast Guard buoy tenders would provide the crew relief and replenishment. When a lightship is taken off station and sent to in for repairs, a relief lightship is assigned to occupy that station. And alongside, instead of the name of the station, will be the word painted, the word relief. And that way, the mariner knows that the lightship that's on station, he's in the right place, because the notice to mariners has told him that there is a relief lightship that is taking the place of the regularly assigned lightship. But he will know that he's in the right place when he sees the name relief on the side of the ship. They have a very large light up on the top. They had a radio beacon for many, many years. And at least one lightship on the East Coast was run down in the fog by an ocean liner before the days of radar. That lightship was sunk and all hands were lost. So the idea that lightships existed until we were able to develop very large buoys that could occupy and hold the station. And when the weather really got bad on many lightship stations, the ship would have to get underway and use her engines to hold her anchorage. So about 40 years ago, we started replacing lightships with very large buoys. And now on the seaward side of the Columbia River Bar is a buoy that marks where the lightship was before. It is now the sea buoy for the channel that takes ships across the Columbia River Bar. One of the pieces of maritime news, some of you may have seen this, the car carrier Fremantle Highway off the coast of the Netherlands is burning, and she is being moved to where she can be salvaged. The interesting thing about her is that she was carrying 3,783 cars, of which 500 are electric cars with the high-heat lithium batteries, that when a lithium battery catches on fire, then it's double the heat. So I have, as always, far too quickly come to the end of my time. And with a line of thanksgiving for having known Emeritus, for having been given such a great example of don't give up the ship, because Toby did that, did not give up his particular ship many, many times over in his life. And so next week, it's going to be a special one-hour-long program. Susan and I are going to team up together, and we're doing a program called, starting at noon, called Real Talk from the Captain's Chair. Susan and I together, we're going to do an hour together, and all of Captain Joe's people will certainly want to be on board when it is time for that. And as always, this is your Captain Joe. We never... I would say, until we meet again, to all of my people out there, you are, as always, in the palm of my hand. And I'm going to head from here. I am going to the light at Cape Disappointment to look out over the Columbia River Bar. And as always, I remain on station and watching properly. And thanks to Captain O'Brien for...